Judy Conrad. It's I can remember the days going to the symphony, seeing that beautiful redhead back then playing the flute. It was the town was different back then, you know?
Town was different, symphony was different, life was different. But it was some of my wonderful years playing in the Phoenix Symphony. You know, I was in for, almost 20 years. And boy, did I love it. It was great.
But you seem to have played with everyone at some point, even Flagstaff.
You know, you live long enough. And you have played with everyone. In the music world, it's just pretty amazing.
Beyond that, though, you have inspire other players and teach other people.
Well, it is one of my joys, I must say. Teaching is one of my joys. And I think it's something that I have found that I'm very good at, probably because I love it, you know. And my students, many of them have turned out very well. And even when they don't have great success on the flute, they're all great kids. And, you know, taking an instrument, learning an instrument is such a marvelous thing anyway. So whether you do something with it professionally, you've still learned a great deal when you've learned to play a musical instrument.
20 years now with Rosie's House? Is that how long?
Yeah, 20 years at Rosie's House. I'm retiring as of actually this month will be my last. Next Wednesday is my last lesson with my students. I'm trying to gird myself up for that.
Can you believe it's been that long?
It's been 20 years. I can't imagine. 1996, I read about an article in the newspaper, big picture of Rosie, mm-hmm. Rosie Schurz, and she had this wonderful, I thought beautiful idea of starting a school for the inner city kids, giving them free lessons, giving them free instruments while they were there. And just, I read that article and I thought, boy, that's sounds wonderful, like a wonderful mission to me. And so I think I called the number in the newspaper and said, you know, I'd like to talk to Rosie about, because, you know, I've been teaching flute for several years, quite a few years, and, you know, I'd love to just talk to her about it. So it didn't take long. I forget exactly how it was. I think I was interviewed by her little board she had started, and I was in pretty quickly.
It takes a character like Rosie to get something like this going.
Let me tell you, Rosie has such an attitude. She is so strong, and she's put herself through so much to make all this happen, and I totally admire that woman. Actually, I totally love her. But, without Rosie and her husband Woody, he helped a great deal, too, and they put so much money in. And they put so much effort in buying the house that we first taught in and buying all the furniture and, so many things that they did.
When you mentioned some of your students have gone to careers with flute, but what you and I hear the whole time we're growing up, and now we're trying to convince everybody else that it's not just this anecdotal evidence that learning music helps your entire brain. All this evidence is there. We keep trying, how do we get music in the core curriculum? And if someone like Rosie comes along and says, but this is so important. This isn't just about teaching kids a skill. This is teaching kids to be whole people and to learn in a whole
teaching,
way.
This is teaching how to live your life, honestly. I mean, do you want to succeed at anything? I don't care what it is. Do you want to succeed? Then do what you do for a good music lesson. You prepare. You practice every day or at least every, you know, 5 or 6 days a week. And, you know, at Rosie's House, we require, I think it's 25 minutes a day, and I strongly encourage my students to do more than that. And we have them fill out practice charts. We have their parents sign it, because it's a very big deal putting the time in, because otherwise, why are you there? Mm. And so they learn that you apply yourself. Do you want to be good at something? Okay, apply yourself. Now, that's a life lesson. I don't care what you want to be good at.
How is Rosie's House different now than when you first went? And what, I mean, the philosophy must be, if not the same, very similar.
I think it's pretty much the mission. They change the words once in a while, but the mission really has never changed, to give kids the opportunity who would ordinarily not have the opportunity to learn music, to learn to get lessons that they don't have to pay for, because that's a huge gift. Basically, it's always been a gift. Rosie always thought of it as the gift of music, and that's how we think of it too, and we think it's a beautiful gift. And those kids pass it on, and they learn so much, and their parents are so supportive. It's really a very beautiful thing. I've enjoyed being a part of it all these years.
And that is key. If the parents aren't on board, then this isn't going to fly.
That's correct. But the beautiful thing for me as a teacher is the kids are there because they want to be, not because mom is dragging them to a lesson. You know, she thinks that they need to learn a musical instrument. The kids are all there. They're excited.
Have you a guess in these years? And I'm just talking Rosie's house. How many kids have passed through your...
Mm. Gosh, I hadn't even thought about it, but no, I wouldn't have a guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I do run into them sometimes, quite often, thank God. They'll come back just for a visit, so I get to see them. And they're all doing really well, you know. I've got kids that almost all of them went on to college, and almost all of Rosie's house kids do get on to college.
How many of the flutists that you taught have gone on or still playing?
Oh, golly. Well, I've got six of them coming to the big gala that we're having on May 14th. We're celebrating our 20 years. And they're allowing me, because I'm one of the honored guests since I'm retiring, to have some of my former students, some of the alums, are coming, and we're all playing like this piece for eight flutes. And it's got six C flutes, and that's my students. And then it's got an alto flute, which is also one of my students. And then the other flute teacher, Katie Valadez, is going to play bass flute, which incidentally, we're really trying hard to raise funds to buy a bass flute, because we have this flute choir we're trying to get started. And you cannot have a flute choir without a bass flute. It's so important.
Well, let me just interject there that if you want to see a bass flute, go on Facebook. You've got pictures up of, I'm sure there are people saying bass flute is not an oxymoron. And,
Yeah, go on Facebook, go to my page, Judy Conrad, and I've got a picture of a bass flute and said, you know, we need one of these. Because bass flutes are big. I mean, they are the bass. It's like the bass viol of the string section as far as giving you a lower, more depth to your sound. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're so important to us.
And I'm assuming pretty expensive.
Yeah, I think the what we're aiming for is $3,000, and that's pretty much on the low end of what you would pay for an instrument.
And you getting close, or?
We're about halfway there.
Okay.
About halfway.
Well, that'd be a nice way to leave, knowing that the bass flute's going to be there.
I'm actually donating my alto flute, so they'll have an alto flute. That's my going away gift.
Wow.
So, you know, now they need that bass flute. Too bad I don't have one of those to give to them.
Are you going to stop teaching altogether? Will you still have private students?
I'll try to have a few private students, just because I love to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I won't stop teaching altogether. And I've had such good success with my kids. I can't stop that.
Music, and it's not something you retire from.
No, yeah. I don't see that retirement is in my... I'm already thinking about other things I can do. So.
But keep playing.
Yeah, keep playing. I'm not playing nearly as much. I haven't accepted a professional gig for like 5 years at least, mainly because my lungs are just, they've never been very good. Ever since I was a kid, I had pretty bad asthma. Why does a person with asthma pick up the flute? I don't know.
That reminds me of Arnold Jacobs playing the tuba. Like, what?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
One lung, what? Yeah.
Arnold Jacobs, right. And I'm sort of down to that. I'm about down to the function of one lung only. So,
well, now, were you born here?
No, I was born in Ohio.
Ohio. Did your family move here because of your asthma?
Yeah, I was one of the big reasons that they moved here. The doctor told them I wouldn't live another year.
Really?
Through another winter, I think, in Ohio. So.
So many people came for that. How old were you when you came?
I was 8.
You remember stepping off from Ohio and dropping off in the desert?
Yeah.
What was that like?
You know, I was such a kid, I didn't really care. It didn't matter that much to me because I still had my family with me. What did I care? I think for my mom, I think back, you know, you don't think about it when you're a kid, but my parents were young parents because they got married on my mom's 17th birthday and my dad had just turned 18, so they were young parents. And And I had an older brother, too, 5 years older than I. So I just, I didn't think much about it, but my parents were in their early 30s. And when they left Ohio, they left everything and everyone they had ever known. Mm. They came out here just for their family. And that took some guts. Looking back, of course, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but that 30, in their early 30s, that was young.
Because that's the other side of a dynamic that I've talked about with other people whose parents moved here, or perhaps they moved here. And growing up here, now I was born here, but you grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
I just recall being very aware of the fact that my teachers had all moved here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest message I got from them was, just because it's done doesn't make it so. You got to blaze a trail. Try something new. I don't know. Maybe that'll work. They were all about experimentation and growing the possibility beyond Carnegie Hall, because it wasn't down the street.
It was exactly.
A whole different, yeah. Did you start playing flute here?
Yes, yes.
Was some of that medical? Was it, well, if we get her breathing diaphragmatically?
No, it was just mainly stupidity on my part. No one ever said, why in the world are you taking up the flute? But I will say, when I had played in this, I was a member of the symphony at the time, and my asthma was getting so bad, my lungs were getting so bad, that I would go directly from rehearsals to the emergency room.
Really?
I didn't want to admit that I was struggling, but oh my goodness, I was really struggling. And one night at the emergency room, I didn't come out of it, and they had to give me a trach. I had to have a trach. I was 28 years old.
Oh.
And the doctor who basically saved my life, John Friedman, my pulmonologist, told me that if I hadn't been a flutist all those years, he didn't think I would have pulled through it. So it did do something for my lungs, for sure. Thank God.
Was that a grade school thing, or where did you find the flute?
Yeah, I loved it. I just loved the flute. When they would had you fill out these things in grade school, would you like to play an instrument? I was going to Ball School, which was totally an inner city school at the time. And I put harp, because I really loved the harp. But I'm sure they thought I was a smart aleck kid, because, of course, there was no harp there. So I never got anyone, no one ever replied to that. So when I went to high school, I wanted to play the flute. And Charles Coulter was my band director. And he said, well, you know, we only have one flute, and I've already given it to another girl. So how about French horn? I said, well, you know, fine, I'll take the French horn, but I wanted to play the flute. And I saw that this other girl that had the flute never took it home at night. So I took it home one night. I learned like a 2-octave scale of how to finger all the notes for like 2 octaves, and I played it for him the next morning, and he took it away from her and gave it to me. So that's how I got to play the flute.
This is what makes you, another reason you're a great teacher.
Maybe so.
Advice on not only how to play the instrument, but how to conduct yourself with other musicians.
You've got to be very important. You've got to really push to make things happen. That's all there is.
You told me something interesting. You graduated from Camelback High School.
I did.
As the first 4-year class?
We were in the first 4-year class. There was a graduating class before us, but they all started as sophomores. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I graduated in 1957. And I'm lucky to say that I have 2 or 3 really fine friends to this day from that class. My best friends.
When you think back on the valley that you came to in the 1940s, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Late 40s.
A lot's changed.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
But when you think of the changes that have happened here, because there's the cosmology, you know, the way things look and all that, but what do you see? What's changed the most?
We're just a more sophisticated state, I think. The Phoenix area, greater metropolitan Phoenix area, is just, there's a lot more sophistication going on. But I think the biggest thing I noticed growing up here, pretty much growing up here, was when we went back to Ohio, to the Midwest generally. I don't know how to explain it, but it just felt so closed in there. I suppose we do have the big open spaces here, but more than that, more open thinking. It's the only way I know how to say it.
Mm.
And I just felt closed in when we went back to visit for a while, although I did love all that greenery, I'll tell you.
When you think back on, when you joined the orchestra, was Guy Taylor conducting?
Yes, he was. Okay. He was conducting.
See, and that's another thing. I wish that history were known better, because the orchestra was commissioning new pieces, playing new repertoire.
I'll tell you what we did back then, is we got top grade one soloists coming in. We had Enrique Shearing. We had Beverly Sills.
I'm remembering Claudio Rao.
Yes, Claudio Rao, Rostropovich. Pablo Casals came and conducted us once. He was 93. I got my picture taken with him. I'm so proud of that. I mean, we used to have really, I mean, the people they have are marvelous. I mean, I just heard the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto. I'm sorry, I can't think of the girl's name, but she was really good. They have really marvelous musicians, but they don't have Van Cliburn, which we did.
Yeah.
So I miss those days. And that's when I learned the most about music, was just being on the same stage with those people. It was an amazing experience.
What year did you join the orchestra?
1963. And the reason I'm so sure of that is that's also the year my first son, Steve, was born.
Is there a musical moment that stands out above all others? Maybe an exposed part you had, a chance to play something that, because you were in the Phoenix Symphony, you got a chance to do that? Or,
you know, there's quite a few treasured memories that I have. I think possibly just because it's special for me as a musician. We were playing the Shostakovich Fifth, and there's a little piccolo solo in it. And it's a delicate little nuanced, pretty solo. And I loved it. And we had a guest conductor, and I'm sorry, I have no idea what his name was. We had a guest conductor, but he was conducting us, and we came to that part, and I played my solo. And, you know, sort of with love, because I loved that solo. And when I had finished it, he stopped the orchestra, and he said, "I've never heard that played more beautifully." Oh, my God. Brought tears to my eyes.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was a beautiful moment, but there were a lot of beautiful moments. Hearing some of these soloists was just thrilling. I remember hearing Jessie Norman, and I didn't play on the piece that she sang. Can't remember it. I'm terrible with remembering things. But since I wasn't playing, I went and sat in the last row of the audience, because, of course, it was a rehearsal. It didn't matter. I sat in the very last row, and she had a pianissimo that she just struck the note, and she just held it at a pretty much piano sound, and then it just became a pianissimo and just came floating out into all the way out into the very back of the room of that audience, and I could feel the hair on the back of my neck stand up. When I'm trying to teach students to play at pianissimo, I tell them that story. It's got to project, but it has to be a pianissimo. That was an amazing moment too.
Well, on behalf of a lot of folks, and a lot of them won't know your name, but they will have had the benefit of having you not only with about every performing arts group in town, but as a teacher in a Rosie's house. Congratulations.
Thank you, Sterling. Enjoy your retirement.
We'll look forward to seeing you maybe play. And I know you'll continue to teach, but thanks for all you've done.
Oh, it's been my pleasure and my honor, I'm telling you right now. Thank you very much, Sterling.